Chinatown presents Dead On Movie Reviews.
Oh, hey! We're live! Whew. That's pretty exciting. Salutations and mutilations, you're listening to Otherworldly Culture Presents Dead On Movie Reviews. Tonight, we will present horror movie reviews and lively debate here on otherworldlyculture.com and on future select Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can join our live chat at that time by clicking on the live shows link on otherworldlyculture.com, the website, or you can come out now on Twitch. This is our first time on Twitch. And I want to thank you all for joining us tonight. I'm your host, Tim Kretschmann, coming to you from the land of lakes and landfills, beautiful and smelly Muskego, Wisconsin. And it's my honor to introduce the Faculty of Fear panel presenting tonight's lectures. First, the meat is on the way. Ladies and gentlemen, America's little sweetheart, the killer clown, and getting down the speedy freak that loves to speak and streak. He's smoking a stogie and eating a hoagie, stalking the small and the wild and pulling down the burlesque with a quest. He is the only, the lonely Rich Del Zotto.
Good evening, Tim. Thank you for the honor of inviting me to your show.
Thanks, Rich. And coming to us from the other corner, we have Adam Holtzapfel. He is our hardcore otherworldly culture columnist, and he won't brag, but he is in fact the Taco King. And as usual, he exhaustively searched every nook, every cranny, every dark corner of the internet by clicking a single button that was marked shutter. He is the Taco King. Here's Adam.
Hey, Tim, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being on the show. And last and leastly, we have little Mikey Exler. He's back again today as the denizen of the dismal, the purveyor of the putrid, that exciting exclaimer of glorious gloom wrestling up from his stony tomb. He's the monster of the mad, ghoul of the glad, and the sack of mumbling, moaning pus that barfs out baloney. He's one, and there are many, but he's our very own panel purveying provocateur, Coach Michael Exler. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me on. How are you this evening?
Pretty good. We got past our technical difficulties part of the show, so that's always a good part. Hopefully, we'll be rolling well. We didn't even, before the show, I was so nervous getting everything up and running, we didn't even talk about what order we're going to go in. So I'm just going to choose somebody at random with one of these buttons I have here to be the first to go. And I think it's looking you right in the eyes who it's going to be. You knew it was coming your way. Adam, what have you been watching?
So I watched the 2020 film Freaky that is currently on video on demand. It is not on Shudder. I know that brings
what? Wait, what? Yeah. That's a first, everybody. Mark it down.
I know, right? So the film stars Vince Vaughn and Catherine Newton. Kind of a horror comedy. I believe the original title was going to be Freaky Friday the 13th. Because, you know, that's what it is pretty much. Overall, this was a fun film. Clocks in at an hour and 45 minutes, I believe, which they could have trimmed some of the fat and it would have been just as good. What worked for me with this was the story. You don't see too many body swap films in the horror genre. Child's Play has elements of that.
Yeah.
So does Shocker, but they're not full-on body swap flicks.
What was that movie? Didn't Denzel Washington do one?
Fallen. Yeah, yes. That had elements of it too.
That was a great one. I love that movie.
It, Yeah, I need to revisit that. It's been a few years.
Yeah, I would caution you not to. It doesn't. Once you know kind of the thing, once you kind of know the thing, and I'm definitely not going to be the one that breaks it here. It isn't as good of a movie, but when you see it the first time, it's like, holy crap, what a great movie.
Yeah, the story for this was good. They used the typical cursed item that's touched by both, does the swapping, and
I believe that cursed item was a tiki idol that the Brady Bunch found in Hawaii. And it just kind of came up.
I hate to say that you're wrong and that you're showing your age, Tim, but and what worked for me was Vince Vaughn. A lot of people know him as a comedian, but if anyone saw Brawl in Cell Block 99 that came out a few years ago, it kind of showed off his physical acting skills and a more serious role, and was kind of good to see him carry that over to this. And Catherine Newton as Millie, she was really good in the comedy Blockers, that was kind of like a female American Pie. Mm-hmm. And to see her kind of take on a darker role was nice. So, overall, I think this could have been trimmed a little short. I think they spent too much time showing how alone she was and that nobody really noticed any difference in her character. But her and Vaughn together, I think, worked as a good protagonist-antagonist team, and it's a film I'll definitely check out at least once a year, if not more.
Okay. And I had seen this movie and discussed it on a previous program, but I loved this movie too. And I got to ask you, having seen it now, who do you think... Obviously, Vince Vaughn's role was the more showy of the two, but who do you think did a better job playing the other character?
I think Catherine Newton did. Yeah. Like, Vince Vaughn was pretty much what I expected, and the main chuckle I got out of him was whenever he'd push or hit someone, he's like, oh my god, I'm so strong. But I think she did a better job kind of playing the evil character.
She
and
literally,
I wasn't expecting it.
So. She creeped me out. She creeped me out a couple times, and he didn't as much. Now, I do think Vince brings along a lot of comedy baggage these days, and that isn't where he started. I mean, he did Psycho, you know?
So. He did, and I don't think they really gave him an opportunity to kind of be the creepy character, which I kind of would have liked to have seen more of. And
I think the mistake, like there was they had him wearing the mask at the beginning. That's not a spoiler. The first 10 minutes there, he's basically Jason, you know, and he's wearing a mask. And I'm like, you paid for Vince Vaughn. Get the mask off of him. What, he's the only celebrity in the movie, really. You know, he's the big name. But, yeah. All right. Are we ready for grades yet, or you have more?
Yeah, I'm ready to grade it.
Okay, let's see if this button's going to work. Hey! All righty. So, what are you grading Freaky, easily available on VOD all over the place?
I'd give it an A. It's definitely got a rewatchability to it. It had some good kills. Nothing really too wrong with it other than trimming some fat here and there.
Yeah. I agree with you. I specifically pointed to the relationship of with the mother. It didn't need to be as complicated as it was.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say that's complicated. I think they tried to oversell on how alone she was, because like her friends were just kind of like, oh, Millie's wearing new clothes. Like, yes and no, but yeah, it just kind of showed how she is kind of insignificant in life, I guess I'd say, but they oversold it at times.
Fantastic. Hey, I do want to point out we've got some new people in the chat room tonight, and we want to thank them for joining us, Miss Deeks. And we have Elsnor Rapido are both in our chat room. This is exciting for us because we're used to Facebook Live and not a whole lot of activity in that chat room there. So thank you for joining us tonight. Well, we're going to move on to our next review, and we're going to go to Rich. Rich, what have you been watching?
Tim, I watched a Shudder film, so there you go. You got your Shudder review for the night.
Yay!
I watched 2020's Scare Me. This was actually chosen for me. I did a little random scrolling through and stopped on a few movies and gave it the list to a friend, and they chose this for me. So I had nothing else to do. So this is what I ended up with. So the review. It's written and directed and stars Josh Rubin. There's also a star, Aya Cash. You may have seen her on Amazon's show, The Boys. She plays a character named Stormfront. A small cast. And they're the majority of the on-screen action. The story, it's basically two strangers, both of them are writers, end up renting cabins and a campsite somewhere in the wintertime to seclude themselves and do some writing. They happen to meet one morning and discover pretty quickly they're both writers. In this, they establish that Josh Rubin's character, whose name is Fred, is pretty unaccomplished, and Aya Cash's character, Fanny, is a best-selling horror author. So you fast forward a little bit. It's later in the evening. The electricity goes out in the cabins. Fanny has stopped by Fred's cabin, and to pass time, they begin telling each other scary stories with the idea of, can you scare me? At this point, it basically becomes kind of a pissing contest between the two of them. That leads to a continued showing of Fred's inferiority and of his creativity compared to Fanny's. And as the story continues, we learn that not only is Fred unsuccessful as a writer, but he's pretty much been unsuccessful at life and relationships and everything else. It continues on for a while with them telling different stories. They're even, for a short bit, joined by the local pizza delivery guy, Carlo. He's a big fan of Fanny's book and is excited to take part in the storytelling. And he kind of also piles on with making Fred feel inferior to Fanny. We get to a point where the night starts to wind down and it's actually getting close to dawn. And Fred's had too much to drink during the night of storytelling. He convinces Fanny to stick around for one last story. And in this last story, he kind of now brings to the forefront all the jokes and reminders of his last lack of success as an author. And it kind of fuels the story and wraps into the end of the movie, leaving the viewer wondering if he was just telling one final story to try to scare her, or was he looking to possibly physically take out the frustrations of his life and being the butt of the unsuccessful jokes of the evening out on her, maybe even in her death. And we're kind of left wondering at the end. Probably ruined it. I don't care. So basic rundown of the movie or my feelings on it. Not too often that a movie reaches rarefied air in my all-time rankings, but Scare Me does. It will go down as one of the most, annoying films I've ever watched.
Oh.
Of any genre.
Really?
I kept excuse me, I kept pausing the film to do a time check to see how much time was remaining.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it was just, it was visual and verbal torture for me. I kept wishing my TV would die. the things that made it annoying for me, the dialogue, it was one of those movies where you realize the writer really has nothing interesting or new to provide to the viewers. So he tries to use a vast vocabulary to try to fool you into thinking there was something special or good about the movie. You know, like when artsy film people sit there and say, you just don't get it, but they really won't admit that you do get it. It's a piece of shit, but they need to try to make you feel like they achieved some superior level of art appreciation. That was how I felt this movie was treating me. So beyond the horrible dialogue that the vocabulary and everything else created, there was further torture because the actors, when they're telling their scary stories, they acted out every nuance of their story. And it was like you were dragged to an improv show to watch a bunch of hacks circle jerk each other into thinking they're witty and creative. In my opinion, improv should be a crime. And honestly, the acting in this film should be a crime as well. The one bright spot in this black hole of darkness for me was Carlo. He actually seemed to have a little bit of potential to give a decent performance and possibly even make you laugh if he was in a different film.
Carlo, was that Chris Reed?
I believe that was his name, but I don't remember off the top of my head, to be honest with you.
He was in Disjointed, which was a Netflix show called Kathy Bates. He is super fucking funny. And I'm sad to hear this, I'm happy to hear that at least he was somewhat decent in it, because I think he has some talent.
Like, fast forward to where he comes in and watch it, and then as soon as he leaves, turn it off. And it might be a good evening for you.
We're being told in the chat that he comes from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I
saw the potential in him. I did not know him, but I liked what I saw from him. But beyond that, I wasn't a big fan.
So hold on, that is some hot news in the chat room. So did Bill Murray leave the Saturday Night Live? I didn't know there were new people on there.
Yeah, and there's rumors that Eddie Murphy's going to leave as well.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, next thing you know, Chevy Chase is gone.
Good news is Chris Farley's coming back.
So is Norm MacDonald.
That's so wrong. Every time you bring up Chris Farley, you know I'm going to mention that I used to listen to him on local radio before he was a big hit. And I used to love his little radio show, and it always amazed me. The first time I saw Chris Farley, I'm like, that dude's huge. What the hell?
Radio?
Yeah, on radio, he had no idea. Are you ready to grade, Rich?
Sure.
All right, let's see here. Hey, it's worked twice in a row. All righty, Rich. What are you going to grade this? It sounded pretty angry there.
I really want to give it an F, but I'm going to give it a D- because of Carlo. The few minutes he's on the screen gave me a glimmer of hope. So I will give it a D-. We're not going to fail tonight.
Well, I think everybody always knows you are a generous grader, and, it's nice that you went out of your way to be kind to animals on that one. Fantastic. Well, it's time to go to the next room. We are going over to Mike Exler. Oh, boy, that did not pull up what I thought it was going to. Here we go. Mike. Mike, there you go. Hey, I've heard of this movie.
You have?
Yeah, I have. I heard of it one time before.
One time?
Yes.
This is with Sandra Bullock. No, I'm just kidding. It's not the 28 Days. What is the name of that movie? Do we know? 28 something?
I think it's just 28 Days.
Well, it's terrible. But
Ben's not in our chat room, so our automatic Googling is not happening tonight. But we want to thank everybody that's there.
It is 28 Days.
Is it 28 Days? I remember watching it And that's the only thing I remember about that movie.
I only know that because of a segment on The Office where someone thought they were renting 28 days and rented 28 days later by mistake.
Okay.
Because Blockbuster doesn't have the boxes out.
Aha. Okay. Well, Mike, tell us about 28 days later. None of us have heard of it. So your opinion is going to sway us all.
I know Rich has seen this movie. I know you've all seen this movie.
Okay, I'm going to just kind of ask this question before you go into it. Do you think this is perhaps the second or third most watched zombie movie of all time?
It's an incorrect statement. It's not a zombie movie.
Well,
yes, it is not a zombie film.
Whatever.
It's an infection film, which is completely different than a zombie film. I guess, is that a horror hipster thing to say?
It certainly was, but I love that you did it.
So this film is from 2003. It was filmed in 2001, but it took a little bit to get finished and distribution. It's starring Cillian Murphy. It's directed by Danny Boyle, which, I mean, I'm sure everybody's familiar with his work. The basic setup of this film is a rage virus takes over Europe, England in specific. Funny side note of this film, Ewan McGregor was supposed to be the main character instead of Cillian Murphy, but he had a falling out with Danny Boyle over the film The Beach. Does anybody remember that movie?
Is that the one with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there was no reason to ever see that movie.
Well, apparently he had promised Ewan that was going. He was going to be the star of the film, and then he gave it to Leo, and that's where the falling out happened. And then they had Ryan Gosling assigned to the project, and then he had to drop out because of a scheduling conflict. So the third choice was Cillian Murphy. He was cast because of his performance in Sunshine, if you had seen that.
Yeah, he's definitely the third choice.
Yeah, he is. the third choice. One of the reasons that I picked this film is I always talk about dark horror and I always am looking for it. This film, if you haven't seen it, I think delivers on all facets of dark horror. And for Walking Dead fans, this is how your story starts. But this was written much, much earlier than The Walking Dead. So the story starts with Cillian Murphy's character waking up in the hospital to try to figure out what's going on with this rage virus. Tim, there was one thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit was on the production side of the film. This was all filmed in digital video. They used a Canon XL1 camera for this film.
Oh, they didn't use the Red? Okay. I believe that's the one. You did the research. Yeah.
They did. They used that, and they wanted it for the aesthetic of the film. They wanted, Danny was quoted as saying that he wanted to feel like he wanted the audience to feel that you were part of the survivors. And he felt that this was the best way to do that. And it was going to look a little grainier. It's not going to look as clean as it usually would. But another thing that I thought was really interesting was the police and local authorities were definitely more on board with shutting shit down, like the scenes in you know, London.
Yes.
And all of that, because they could set up a 6-camera shot within minutes. And that would take hours, if not almost a day, to set up with the 35mm cameras. So it was like they were offering them like, hey, this is a big ticket item to, you know, literally make London look, you know, like there's nobody there. But with the timing and everything, they were able to do it without much disruption to both the highway and the inner city of London. So
if you look at our video feed, you see about 90% of the pictures that I was able to find on the internet are of that sequence. of walking through London completely empty. And it really does set the scene. The thing that I always get a kick out of with this movie, and it's happened in horror movies before, is the waking up in the hospital not knowing what the hell's going on motif. And the best I can tell, I think the first time I encountered it, and it's one of the older ones that I've seen it in, is Day of the Triffids. And I remember when I watched this the first time, I'm like, if there's freaking plants running around eating people, I'm out. But did you guys ever catch Day of the Triffids?
No.
It literally starts. Actually, I think Day of the Triffids, there is a good movie somewhere in there. Because the idea is this guy is in the hospital for eye surgery. So his eyes are recovering. And there is an eclipse, and everybody that looks at the eclipse goes blind. And he comes to, takes the bandages off. He can see fine, but virtually everybody looked at the damn eclipse. So they're all blind. And, you know, when everybody's blind, the man with one eye becomes the king type of idea. Now, it quickly goes into ridiculous land with killer plants running around and chasing people. But there is some great ideas in it. And if you read the book, it's certainly better realized there. But, okay, get back to 28 Days Later. That's one of those movies that I wish was better.
Well, this one's a better version of that. The music of this film is definitely something I wanted to talk about. I find the music to be a very important part of the film. There's a lot of films that say that music's a, you know, important part, and I think it is an important part to a lot of films. But this film in particular, it's to a point where it can lull you into a sense of security and then take that away from you immediately, or it can set up chaos really quickly. And it's very subtle. It's not in your face, you know, like dun, 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 you know, it's a subtle part of the film. And I think it was very well done and very well placed within the scenes of the film.
I think it's creepy. It does a creepy factor. And I think the only place I've found music like that would probably be video games, right? Some of these horror survival video games, I think, sometimes have that just kind of subtle creepiness, which I think you need for a video game because it's got to repeat so much.
Right.
But, it's unsettling. That whole first half in a movie, I think, is very unsettling.
It is. Another thing is with the shooting in DV, they were able to film the whole film in sequence, which again, as we know, is not something that's normally done in the Hollywood universe. So I think I picked this older film. I had rewatched it over Halloween, and it just resonated with me with what's going on. Mm-hmm. I said the film starts what's going on today in society. But the film starts, I guess I misspoke. It doesn't start with him in the hospital. It starts in the lab where the token people come in from an animal safety cause. And they want to release the monkeys from, you know, the horrible torture that they're going through. Mm-hmm. The scientist comes in and he tells them that this is what's going on. Do not release these animals. They are filled with a rage virus. And you can clearly tell that the monkeys are not normal. That's one thing that bothered me about these people. Like, if you looked and these monkeys were just like all, you know, peaceful looking and they look sad, like, okay, maybe you have an argument for opening that fucking cage. But these monkeys don't look like that at all. They look fucked up. And so
maybe they thought there was still some good eating meat on them.
I don't know. I would not want to touch one of these monkeys.
Mad monkeys.
So the scientist is pleading, like, do not do this, man. Just please don't.
So then they open it up and he goes ape?
Yeah, they decide to not listen to the scientist. And they open up the cage and the monkey decides to attack the man. And it immediately starts the chain reaction of the rage virus. So I just thought it funny that there is a certain group of individuals in our today's society that are essentially the ones coming to try to take the monkeys and not listening to the scientists. I just thought that was a prudent correlation. And I also wanted to state that the film shows how quickly society breaks down. You know, they don't show it in particular, but they get into a point in the film where some of the people relive what they went through. And within that, you can see how quickly things just turn to fucking shit. And again, something that, you know, social commentary before the commentary was needed. One thing I did want to mention is I found the scenes of London empty and the highway empty not as unnerving as I did pre-COVID. Yeah. Seeing it for real kind of takes that punch away a little bit, if you will.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I thought that when I was going through these pictures, setting it up for tonight's show, I was like, yeah, they could have shot this on Thursday.
Exactly. It wouldn't be a big deal to shoot this film now at all. So yeah, it definitely took that punch away. Also, there's a scene where there's two main characters and they meet up with eventually, which are the next two main characters, and they form their little squad and they celebrate one evening. And that evening was actually September 11th, 2001, when they were filming. Hmm. And they all just realized, you know, they said it was the hardest night on set because they had to be happy. And none of them were happy, obviously, because of the events that unfolded that day. But there's also a scene in the film where Jim, who is Cillian Murphy, comes across. He makes his way to Piccadilly Circus and he comes across missing persons flyers that are, you know, strewn about everywhere and tacked up on walls and everything. And Danny Boyle got a little shit from that because they thought it wasn't sensitive to what happened on 9/11. And he basically said that this was shot before 9/11 happened, and this was based on an earthquake that happened in China. So it really had nothing to do with 9/11, but he realized that he should not have put it in the film, and he said if it was post 9/11, he would not have even have shot a scene like that.
Right.
So I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that? Do you think that's pandering? Or because there's been a lot of fucking places where they put flyers up like that after disasters.
And you know, when you start looking at a movie that at this point, this film is coming up on its 20th anniversary here, you have to look at it through the scope of the date and time that it came from.
That's fair.
I just watched King Kong, the 1933 version. And literally the first half hour is just about how this is no place for a woman. You know, that's all they say over and over and over again. To modern eyes, you're kind of like, oh my God. But in 1933, that's literally what they would have said. They would have said, yeah, this is for men sailors to go out and adventure and blah, blah, blah. So you always have to take a historical perspective. And history is now a lot sooner than it used to be. It seems like things become historical before you know it. I know I watch my 80s movies all the time, and you watch it and you go, well, why didn't he pick up his cell? Oh, that's right. You know, you have those moments all the time because things are moving at such a rapid pace. So I think sometimes we read too much into things as well. Sometimes the movie is just a movie.
I agree. I agree. I think no matter what tragedy happens, that's something that's going to happen in a city. But again, he had to make a statement, I guess, at that time. Like you said, you got to look through it, look at it through the time frame.
Well, how many times have we, you know, we've heard artists that they said, yeah, I just picked it because it looked cool. You know, you've interviewed a lot of filmmakers, and a lot of times they're like, yeah, that's totally unintentional. I guess it's there. You know, yeah, they say that a lot.
Retrospective thinking, you know, you get a different sense when you have so many years to look at something. Now, the last portion I want to talk about this film, there are a slew of endings for this film. They actually put out 1,400 in copies of the film to theaters that had one ending, and it wasn't testing well. So the rest of the ones that went out to the U.S. and then eventually the world release changed to what would be the ending that everybody would know, and that would be the happy ending, which is my only complaint with this film.
Boy, that's unpredictable. Holy cow, hot take time.
Only you would complain about a happy ending.
Yeah.
Here's my thing.
Here it comes.
Painstaking efforts to make this fucking movie as bleak and dark as possible.
Yeah.
This whole situation is fucked. Mm-hmm. There's nothing really good that can come of this fucking situation. And the ending that I prefer is obviously the darker one, but it just, the characters that are left, it makes fucking sense. It ties back into what they did at the beginning of the story, and it just made fucking sense for the storyline. Forget the tone, forget all that kind of stuff. It just made for a better ending. The ending that we all know with them sewing a bunch of sheets together that says hello and the fucking plane comes over. Oh, did they see us this time? I thought that was contrived. I thought it was forced.
What should have happened is a helicopter should have come down on the top of the mall and he'd fight through just a few zombies and make his way.
That's a different movie.
It's a different movie with like a second ending there.
It is.
It's very similar to me.
So there's actually another ending, which is Danny Boyle calls the radical alternate ending. And for people that have seen the film, they go to a blockade, and that's where they end up meeting up with the military unit. This alternate ending, the film would stop at the blockade, they would never meet the army, and it would go a totally different direction. This direction is fucking super dark. Like, it might even be pushing it for me. They storyboarded it, and it's on the DVD. It's him, it's Danny Boyle and the producer, and I think Cillian Murphy is there too.
Yeah,
but they're reading the dialogue and everything, mm-hmm. and it's fucking, they found a plot hole in the ending, and that's why they ultimately did not go with it,
because
they just couldn't work around the plot hole. So, but the ending would have been like fucking, I would have applauded the ending because it was fucking super dark. But again, it's on the special features. If you have that crazy thing called a DVD, because streaming doesn't give you those.
Yep.
It's on. Definitely check it out. But, it just, yeah, I'm ready to get my grade so I can wrap that up.
And here it comes. Okay, is it going to be a D-?
No.
Okay,
no,
so I'll have to adjust. Okay.
It's going to be an A.
Wow. So get this. We have two A's on today's show. Holy cow. And here's
my rationale for not giving this movie an A+.
Okay.
It's because they went with the ending, the happy ending.
Oh, you are so sad.
Oh, no. And
I was like, okay, they did the happy ending, whatever. There's always the people who are like, it's such a wild ride. You need the happy ending to kind of decompress, blah, blah, blah. Danny Boyle's quote was, we can't do this to people because it was such a tough journey anyway. Well, welcome to the fucking horror genre, man. It's a tough journey, and sometimes shit don't end up fucking right. Watch Alien. Watch a whole bunch. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Shit didn't go too well. Just take the chance. Don't go the safe route sometimes. I'm giving it an A, and I actually was going to give it a B, but I realized that he did film a dark ending that he wanted. He put it out there, and I guarantee you some stiff was like, it's not doing well, so you got to make something else.
Well, you gotta. It costs a lot to make a movie. I do understand that.
So,
if you want a dark ending, we all know which movie we're about to mention. Go check out The Mist.
Yes, yeah, that's one that that didn't pander to the masses.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time for my movie. Will we get another 80 is the big question. I have Fright Night Part 2 from 1988, one of Rich's favorite movies as well, as I've learned. This is, of course, the sequel to the popular Fright Night with Chris Sarandon and William Ragsdale, made just a few years prior to this. This is obviously a step down from the original film, but I feel that Roddy McDowall's performance in this movie might actually be even better than it was in the first movie. I know that's a hot take on that, but he has this one scene where he has the line, "Didn't you hear me? I'm a vampire killer," that he just screams out in a bar that I just found delightful. I thought some of the Roddy stuff was really, really good in this. And I always felt in the first Fright Night, you don't see Roddy McDowall until like 30 minutes in or something like that. And I always felt like he didn't get quite enough stuff to do in that first movie. Now, the music, actually, I also felt was a little bit better in this movie, but the first movie was all synthesizer. You could tell they went and they put like $10 down on the table and said, "Can you do a score for me?" This one, even though the score kind of annoys me, it at least sounds like adults put it together. The other good things in the movie would be John Grease, who plays kind of a rock star werewolf. Now that character was actually originally going to be Jeffries, who played Evil Ed in the first movie. But he got a job on 976 Evil instead. Honestly, you don't say this often, but maybe he was better off with 976 Evil, because that movie actually got seen. Fright Night Part 2 is one of those movies that not a lot of people have seen.
I wish I didn't see 976 Evil.
Yeah.
It really sucks.
Yeah. Same here. Fright Night Part 2 kind of like opened somewhat in the United States, but not a whole lot. I was surprised when I looked that up. Now, the thing that a lot of people point out is that John Grease plays kind of the werewolf vampire in here. And, of course, he also played the werewolf in Monster Squad. And I'll be the first to say, yeah, Monster Squad is probably a better movie than this as well. Brian Thompson does a take on Renfield. He's on screen right now there. He is really good. I think he's an underappreciated actor. He went on to be the heavy on Moon 44, and he was fantastic in a very short TV series. I think you guys have seen it, called Kindred the Embraced. What was that, early 90s, mid-90s, somewhere around there?
Yeah, I want to say mid-90s.
And available on Prime, by the way. Never. What?
In my life.
You never
just mentioned two things I've never heard of.
Really?
Moon 56, what was it?
No, Moon 44. Moon 44 was the first movie that Roland Emmerich made with Dean Devlin. Dean Devlin was still an actor at that time. They went on to make Independence Day and lots of stuff like that. But it's a really cool sci-fi. It's basically if helicopters were in outer space type war movie. You kind of have to see it to believe it. Moon 44, interesting film. And then Kindred the Embraced is based on, wasn't it a card game or something? It was based on some form of game, role-playing game.
It may have been like a Dungeons and Dragons type vampire game where you have the book and create all your characters and shit.
What I liked, and who is the star of that one? You actually interviewed the star of that TV series. He had also made Soul Man. Oh, this is going to kill me.
Oh, C. Thomas Howell.
C. Thomas Howell was the head of it. And what I liked about Kindred the Embraced is they had races of vampires, and they kind of touched on the different types of vampires that you hear of, you know, kind of more Nosferatu looking type, the ones that were rich and, you know, came from old money. You had more of the grungy Lost Boys type. It really was kind of a fun little series, but it only lasted like, I think, half a season. And that was probably the right amount of time. It had kind of run its course already. But Brian Thompson was very good in that. He was really excellent. Now, the problem with Fright Night Part 2 is you have no Chris Sarandon. And the woman that took the lead vampire's place just doesn't have that type of gravitas. To be unkind, she kind of stinks. She's way too lyrical. She isn't menacing. She doesn't seem strong. She's mostly hypnotizing people, which that's lame when you're a vampire and you're hypnotizing people. Why don't you just throw them across the room? That's more fun. So I think it really felt that loss. Getting rid of Marcy and now I can't get her name either.
Amanda
Burse. I don't think that was as big of a loss. Because her character in the first movie was kind of just whiny. And I think every person I ever talked to about that movie, in fact, my friend Jeff that I do the other show with, he just watched it and he said, like, how old was she when she made that movie? Because it seems like Williams Ragsdale is going out with his mom, you know? So I get it. I get it.
She was old enough for me to feel okay about touching myself.
That doesn't take much. But Fright Night Part 2, by the way, was barely released. It only made $2 million on a $9 million budget.
Ouch.
Basically went direct to video. I don't know that it was certainly not going to be the hit the first one was, because the bad guy just didn't work here. But I think had it been given a real release, it would have at least made its budget back. Now, one point for anybody that wants to see this movie, if you grab it, make sure you grab the proper aspect ratio. There is an original DVD that was literally made by them filming a VHS copy, and it's terrible. But there is some pirate stuff out there that's floating around that has it in the correct aspect ratio, which reminds me of when I actually saw this movie when it was first released in our local movie house, and I liked it. I still like this movie. I think it's got a lot of the charm of the original. It just doesn't hit the mark. You know, it's a good movie, not a great movie, which is what you got with the original Fright Night. So I'm going to get right out to my grade book here. And it's time for the report card, and I am going to give this one. Anybody want to guess what I'm going to give it?
C.
Come on, guys. I said I liked it. I do like it. It is going to get a B. I enjoy it a fair deal. I know some of you guys absolutely hate this movie. But yeah. this is one of those movies that I hit it at the right time in my life that I just enjoyed it. I thought it was a good time. Yeah, it's not the bloodiest movie that's out there. It's, but I enjoyed watching it, and I enjoyed watching it again recently for this show. And I also, I still enjoy the original film quite a bit. So that will be it for tonight's show. It is time for us to do... Where is it? There it is. We need to take a look at the website and see what's going on the website. Oh, it did show up. That's good. Otherworldlyculture.com is our website. Let's see what's on the top. We have a review from the Crypt Hellmaster. Let's just ask this question. Oh, Adam.
Yes.
What did you watch Hellmaster on?
I'm not sure if it's still there, but it was on Shudder.
Oh!
I believe it is still on Tubi TV.
Okay, but it'll come back to Shudder in like 3 weeks because stuff comes on and off of these streamers all the time, I'm sure. So, fantastic. Check out his review from the Crypt. A New Horror Realm Radio number 11 horror subgenres. Guys, I didn't get to watch this one yet. And I'm looking forward to checking that one out tomorrow. By the way, folks that have not seen Horror Realm Radio or heard it, because it's radio... very good. You guys should check it out. Great show with Mike and Rich, who are on the show tonight. Dead on the Bases, we had our first episode, a horror guy and a sports guy reviewing each other's types of films. So that was fun to do. All of our shows, by the way, are now available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Android, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Podchaser, email, you can even get them sent to you on, and TuneIn. You can use all of those. So if you have an Amazon Echo like I, you can play them anytime you want with the right words. And we have a number of other articles that are out here that you can check out the next time you go out to otherworldlyculture.com. Want to remind everybody as well, coming up on Thursday. Now, this one's still on Facebook Live as of right now. I think it's going to be moving over to Twitch as well, but we have Dead on the Bases is coming Thursday night live. And I should check with Adam because he's constantly posting stuff. What have we got coming up here?
I think the only thing I have coming up is a review for Queen of Black Magic on Tuesday. It drops on Shudder Thursday. It's an Indonesian film inspired by 1981 film of the same name.
Fantastic. And we did get a question in the chat room. Adam, where did you pick up the Darth Vader that is behind you?
It is a Disney shop exclusive and manufactured by Diamond Select. They do a lot of the Marvel, Ghostbuster, etc. toys are currently on the market.
Fantastic. It does look good. I like your original Star Wars poster art as well. I always love that one. All right. Well, folks, that's it for tonight's show. Oh, we're being asked if it's on Spotify. I don't know why, but Spotify has been very difficult to get that one to work. Oh, I'm also supposed to ask the gang here, who do you think's going to win the Royal Rumble? Any hot takes on that?
George the Animal Steel.
George the Animal Steel for the win, folks. I think that'll make everybody in the chat room pretty happy.
I'm going with Coco Beware. The Birdman's looking strong this year.
Okay, fantastic. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in tonight. We appreciate it. And I think, did I hype everything I'm supposed to, Mike? Did I hit everything?
You did.
All right. And, of course, I should bring this up because Rich never brings it up. There is a fantastic horror convention, Horror Realm, in Pittsburgh. They are continuing to look at when they can safely run their convention again. To keep up with all the latest on that, you can go to the Horror Realm Con, I believe, on Facebook.com. It's Horror Realm Con, I believe, all together. Is that right, Rich?
November 19th to the 21st. Safe or deadly, we don't care anymore.
That's the spirit. Fantastic. Well, thanks so much, everybody. And hang in there, pumpkin, until our next show. And as John Carpenter once said, horror's a reaction. It's not a genre.
Guy from Black Christmas said it first.
Yes. Black Christmas did everything first.
Tell
me when you're done so I can turn it on live.